Hello, RHAP Nation, and welcome to the premiere recap of the 2017 reboot of Battle of the Network Stars. My name is Mike Bloom, wearing a nice yellow blazer, even though we're recording this on 4th of July weekend, so I'm going against the red, white, and blue fashion sense, but there's one thing I know how to do is go against fashion sense. My partner in crime here, much more fashionable than I am, talking everything about this premiere. He also just celebrated his birthday week, and I'm assuming the day after his birthday, he looked a lot like Tom Arnold did coming into this episode. It's Kurt Clark. Kurt, how you doing?
Doing well, here to celebrate the thrill of tabulating and the agony of the Clark curse. So let's get this done.
Are you putting in an early chalk pick for the Clark curse after these 10 weeks for this show?
You know what? It's a contender. I think it's definitely a contender. But we'll have to see, like, when the numbers start to come in. I haven't taken a look yet. But yeah, it's, I don't know. This may just be more of a kind of some spackle in the cracks of their ABC summer lineup that we may not see it again. But the jury's a little bit out. But like I said, it's on the short list.
Well, speaking of spackle, I'm actually surprised there were no Home Improvement kids seen on the TV Kids or TV sitcom side. But we will definitely be sure to talk about that. For those who did not tune in to when Kurt and I talked with Rob Cesternino last week, we did a quick preview of this iteration and talked a little bit about its previous iteration, as well as the Battle of the Reality Stars incarnation, very short-lived, that happened in 2005. Kurt, do you just want to briefly talk about your history with the franchise up to this point?
Oh, boy. Well, without dating myself too much, I did watch some seasons of the original Battle of the Network Stars. I vaguely remember some elements of the first time that Tootie and Blair, we graced our screens. So it was something that I was kind of interested to see what they do with when it came back. I didn't remember that it really was kind of a one and done show in terms of one time, and then you had to wait 6 months for the next airing of the next iteration of it, because it was on twice a year. For some reason, I had it in my false memory that it was lasted several weeks. But yeah, it was just, I guess, one and done. And then lasted well over just over a decade. But yeah, it was something like right along the lines of with Circus of the Stars and Greatest American Hero. For some reason, that's my three tent poles of the 80s was Battle of the Network Stars, Circus of the Stars, and Greatest American Hero.
Believe it or not, Kurt remembers that show. Yes. Yeah, I mean, as a younger individual, I obviously did not see it when it originally aired. I was actually born the year after the original incarnation finished. My access point was actually through All-Star Laugh Olympics, which was actually, came only a couple of years after Battle of the Network Stars premiered, but I saw it on the channel that airs a bunch of old Hanna-Barbera cartoons that essentially has a bunch of different cartoon characters facing off against each other in a myriad of Olympic-like activities that spanned the globe and occasionally went interstellar. Outside of that, I did tune into the Battle of the Network Reality Stars 2005 version, which, again, if you have not checked out that podcast with Kurt, Rob, and I, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's only about an hour long. It was a lot of fun. But as we talked about in there, that left a little to be desired from maybe you're sort of conflating that, Kurt, with that version, which ran for 6 weeks. It seems like we are going to get this for 10 weeks, but a different cast every time. They have touted over 100 stars are going to do battle at Pepperdine University. So just right off the bat here, Kurt, before we get into the episode proper, as someone who has seen the previous version, how do you think it compares? Would you rather see, one big block of this, or do you think this recurring format with swapping in a different cast every time will work in the long run over 10 weeks?
I think I'd almost rather see one big block of it with a, make it an evening or a weekend long event, where you are dipping into more than maybe just the ABC lineup. It felt they had to, they're cramming 11 events into the hour long, episode, and they definitely had to yada yada their way through some of them. It'll be interesting to see in future weeks if we spend a little bit more time on, the tennis challenge, maybe a little less time on the kayaking challenge. I don't know. So it just seemed like they were trying to do an awful lot in a little bit of time, and yeah, it just seemed there's an awful lot of hugging. I want a little bit more cutthroatness.
Well, I mean, that's what you want from Battle of the Network Reality Stars, and we definitely did not get it here. I remember we talked on that podcast, too, with Rob about the fact that maybe one of the more disparate things that didn't make the show work is that we're known for, or these people are known for being backstabbing, doing villainous things, or doing, you know, generally outrageous things within the context of their own reality shows. Here, they didn't really have that opportunity. I will say this sort of goes back to the original incarnation, this version, in that, as you said, you know, there really isn't any sort of like team huddle drama going on. They basically show the events only, which, as you said, sort of makes sense considering that they have to cram 10, 11 events in over the course of an hour, which I was pretty surprised by. We'll talk about maybe that structure as it goes along. Do you have any overall thoughts about this episode in general?
I was surprised by the ending. It was definitely they kept the score close, which I think just the way of the structure overall, I'll be curious to see if in the upcoming weeks they go into the final event, the tug of war, with a scenario in which there's no way for one of the teams to actually win, because I think the way that the point structure is set up, you could definitely go into that. So in terms of how this was actually set up, I liked the fact that there was a lot of just kind of give and take of points in the first several events, and it was like tied going into six, seven events in. It was still within like just a hair's distance or a tie. So I thought it was more of an even match than I thought it would be when you looked at the players on paper.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I was looking a little bit at the outset. I mean, the announcers are going to say that, you know, the TV kids team has an average age of 37. The TV sitcoms age average is 50. It's looking a little bit like the LaFleur and Espada tribe from Survivor Nicaragua. And we remember how that pre-merge turned out. So, yeah, I completely agree. It felt like, especially once we saw, you know, Corbin Blue blaze through that first event, I thought like, okay, is this going to serve as like a microcosm for what's about to happen? And it was a really interesting narrative in that, just generally speaking, I feel like it's this idea that like, the TV kids team won more events, but the TV sitcoms team won the events when it counted.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't say Corbin Blue through the first event. Okay, sorry.
Perfect. I'm surprised the announcers didn't say that, though they would probably have to get out every like 3 seconds that he was from High School Musical.
Yeah, I mean, there was that. And then there was, you know, the occasional, there goes Balky, which kind of kept it interesting. But I think that's a good point, is like the events where the points really mattered the most were the ones where the TV sitcoms were able to score the points. I mean, we see at the end that the announcers kind of give an MVP award to AJ because of her performance in the obstacle course and how that was such a pivotal point. And we'll get to that more, I'm sure. It was just kind of a strange mishmash. Like the whole age difference that you mentioned made it seem like the TV kids were going to get an edge. The fact that Tom Arnold was 1/5 of the TV sitcom group seemed to maybe even like more severely handicap them. But we'll see. We'll see if there's like more evenly matched teams going down the road, or if it's going to be a little bit more lopsided.
Yeah, Tom Arnold represented 1/5 of the team, and it looked like he drank 1/5 of something by the time he came into Pepperdine that next day.
They were heavily implying that that's what was going on with Tom.
Yeah, and it's just, ABC isn't a family network, though. You know, you have to be able to kind of put those things, imply them so that the kids at the surface level don't get them, especially, I don't know if the kids were tuning in to watch the TV kids. As you said, we haven't heard the ratings rolling in yet. You know what? I'll say that I had fun with this. You know, I did like it more than the Battle of the Network Reality Stars, at least the episode that we saw, because even though we might argue that it might have gone at too much of a clipped pace, almost like a Corbin Blue-like pace, I felt like, you know, the Battle of the Network Reality Stars premiere went like 2 hours long and only had three events, had all this drama. They decided to put a twist in at every episode. This was much cleaner and simpler. And as a result, I definitely enjoyed it. Now, the question is, am I going to come back every week and watch it? I'm not entirely sure. I think at the end of this podcast, we want to sort of preview the future weeks. But this show for me might be the case of like, if I look at the matchup for the week and I like or know like 6 out of 10 people competing at least, then I'll tune in. But if it's like 4, 5 or less, I'll sort of skip it.
Right. And I think for me, it was interesting, like it started out with the Wide World of Sports opening and you hear Howard Cosell announcing and you have the classic agony of defeat, you know, image of the ski jump guy completely racking himself. And so I think maybe what felt a little bit off for me was I was looking for more. I think what I remember from Battle of the Network Stars is it was shot a little bit more and treated a little bit more like a sporting event. And to me, this was shot a little bit more and treated a little bit more as a sitcom terms of and I think
it would be proper with the theming for this episode.
Yeah, but I think that's maybe not what I was looking for necessarily. I think there was a little bit of more seriousness to the original one in terms of how much people were like getting into it. And so maybe it's because you had like, you know, ABC versus, you know, CBS and you had networks actually competing against each other. And plus, I think you and I are in the interesting position of, you know, we're used to knowing how like the structure of a Survivor or Big Brother or Amazing Race. And like we kind of know the cadence of the show and what's going to be coming next and how to watch it and how to, I think, take notes on it and how to talk about it. Whereas this was new for both of us in terms of how we're going to, I think, approach this podcast as well. And I can see, because we're not going to be reporting on this every week and, you know, we're covering the premiere here, is that my attitude toward it might be much different down the road when I'm not sitting there pausing it every, you know, 30 seconds to take notes on what I just saw. So it's a weird show to take notes on. I think I might enjoy it more than I did if I'm sitting back and watching it.
I'd agree with that. And I'd say on top of that, this just feels like sort of mindless fun, but I don't mean to like disparage the term mindless.
Oh, shoot,
mindless.
Come on. You're talking to the king of mindless fun here. This is, there's nothing wrong with that.
But I think, and I think it can be good in this case because I mean, let's sort of tie this into ABC's like summer block. I forget the theming that they use for it, but I mean, you have like the reboots of The Match Game and Pyramid and Family Feud. Yeah. And you have on top of that, like the boy band, the Gong Show, like it's clear
Candy
that there's
Candy Crush.
Well, that's CBS.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. That's another battle that might be going on of the game shows. But I feel like this is sort of like in that line of like, hey, it's the summer. We don't have any other stuff to put on outside of the Bachelor universe. So, you know, here's some interesting, fun things for you and the family to sit around and enjoy. And if it's filling that purpose, I completely agree. Because, yeah, this definitely does not feel like something that you want to really inspect. There were a lot of fun things on the show that I'm sure we're going to talk about. But for the most part, like, I think if you just sit back and if you know most of the people on the screen, you'd enjoy yourself. It goes along nicely enough. I will wonder, as you sort of alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, how it being a recurring show with a different cast every time is going to feel, especially if like if they do the events in the exact same order, that might get a little repetitive. You know, we're going to have the same two captains of DeMarcus Ware and Ronda Rousey too. So we'll see, you know, 6-7 weeks in if it's the same old tune. But for the first time out, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I think for me, part of the thing that sparked to me the most was getting to see people that I hadn't seen in a while. So getting to see the Bronson Pinchos, you know, the post celebrity mole, Tracy Gold. And, you know, and like I haven't seen Joey Lawrence, I think, since Blossom. I'm not following him on Melissa and Joey and his other recent exploits. But so for me, part of what I did enjoy was seeing some of these people brought back. I don't watch the Goldbergs, so I don't know AJ. But that, for me, I think that might be, like you said, what would potentially get me to tune in down the road is like, you know, who's playing that week? Who would be interesting to see after they've kind of had this hiatus from my screen?
Yeah, let's talk about the cast a little bit, or at least the cast for this episode. So after a couple of like introduction packages, we go down the line. It's almost like, you know, they're playing a college football game or an NFL football game. We have these little interstitials where it cuts to them saying who they are, what they're from, and where they're from. So the red team, the TV Kids team, has Corbin Blue of High School Musical fame, Lisa Welchel from The Facts of Life, and runner-up / fan favorite from Survivor Philippines as well for us reality TV nerds. The aforementioned Joey Lawrence. He says it's from Melissa and Joey, but yeah. I mean, come on. You were a TV kid on Blossom. You weren't that young on Melissa and Joey.
Oh, not even Blossom. Like, Give Me a Break was like where I first met Joey Lawrence. And like, it would have been nice. Like, we, you know, Kim Fields was there and she kind of gave her resume of all the things that she's been on. I was hoping for a little bit more of that from everybody. But I guess it would have been like Joey Lawrence. So I would have appreciated, like, you know, let's talk about your filmography a little bit. Not just Melissa and Joey, but, you know, you were on Give Me a Break. You were on Blossom. Let's talk about some of these things. And also, just so we make sure we don't confuse you with your brothers.
Yeah, there were a full three movies that he was in with his brothers, Disney Channel original films. We have Nolan Gould from Modern Family. Sort of, I don't know. I feel like he stuck out like a sore thumb. Maybe it's just because I don't want to, you know, pick on him too much. But I feel like everyone else there had maybe a little bit more on camera chemistry than Nolan Gould did.
Yeah, he wasn't, I think, fielded as much as I had expected him to be in some of the games. So I was expecting us to see more from him, especially because he's like the only one of these five who is a current regular on ABC. So it was interesting that we didn't see much of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of like a purple Nolan, though I feel like the true purple cast member of the 10 is going to be coming up here soon. But to finish it off, we have she might have been the highlight for me just because of all of her fantastic GIF-worthy reactions. Kim Fields from not only The Facts of Life, but also Living Single and Dancing with the Stars.
Correct. Yeah, it was fun seeing Tootie once again.
She did say New York in the house, so I was nervous for a second that Tiffany Pollard was going to come out as well for like a six person ringer on their team. But she was just talking about where she's from.
And plus, I think it was nice throughout the episode, the times that they would come back to Lisa and come back to Kim and tie that into like the fact that this was like their returnees from Battle of the Network Stars. So kind of getting to see some footage from their original times on the show. It was kind of a nice throwback and a nice callback to the original episode. So I think it was a good choice to have them on the initial episode because it was able to tie in some of the history of the show for people who are just joining it for the first time.
All right, and we get our blue team, our TV sitcoms team, our much older team, as we alluded to before, with Bronson Pinchot, Balky from Perfect Strangers. We've got Tracy Gold from The Facts of Life, who is my contender for the purple person of the episode. She kills the swimming portion, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, but she got absolutely no camera time. I don't know if she just like wasn't having it or if she wasn't giving them as much gold as the other nine.
Not as much gold? I see what she did there.
We also have the aforementioned AJ Mashaka from the Goldbergs, probably the only person who doesn't qualify for an AARP card on this team. We have Dave Coulier, Uncle Joey of Full House. And we also have, finishing it up, showing up a little bit late, Tom Arnold, though I love the sort of like Twitter egg avatar that shows up in his place when they're going down the lineup.
Yeah, I think it would be funny if they like had like listed out what the average age of the team was. And then when he shows up, they do a little odometer spinning wheels of numbers and they kind of bump it up like 17 more years or something when he comes on the scene. Yeah, that was like, was he like a last minute fill in? Because he's like got signs of early Gary Busitis. So I'm worried a little bit for Tom Arnold.
Busitis includes what? Enlarging teeth, affinities for robotic dogs. I guess we're going to keep a close eye on him.
Addiction to acronyms. Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking towards the competitors that we're seeing this week, let's talk about those that we are apparently going to see every week. So these are all ESPN people. So I, of course, had no idea who these people were. But we have our hosts, Joe Tessitore and Mike Greenberg. And then doing the sideline reporting, we have Cassidy Hubberth and Carrie Champion, which you have to assume with the latter. You have to assume that she got basically had a door open with her to the sports world based on her last name alone, right?
Yeah, and I found it a little bit odd that we're first introduced to Carrie when she kind of is doing these red carpet interviews for four of the 10 stars that show up for the competition. And we're not even introduced to who she is until maybe like 10 minutes later into the actual program. And so I was kind of, maybe again, it's just as I get a little bit more detail oriented when I'm taking notes on a show, but I was like, who is this person? Why haven't we been introduced to her? That's kind of a weird structure. Also very awkward when she starts singing the Facts of Life theme song to Kim Fields as she shows up on the red carpet. I'm not sure if you were kind of getting an awkward vibe there as well, but once you kind of got past that and into the actual competitions, I think the two main hosts and then the two sideline correspondents did just fine.
Yeah, exactly. I think they were totally okay with me, someone who again does not know them from a sports center level, so they weren't saying anything that really made me grouse at all, so I thought they were pretty good. And I will say overall, the cast for this week, I think I said in our intro podcast that I was really hoping that this would be the lineup for the podcast that we would do, because of the 10 weeks, this is by far my favorite lineup. There's just so many ridiculous personalities on these two teams, and it definitely showed once we got to the events themselves, considering that I love the TV sitcom scene for so many reasons. One of them is just, as we mentioned, coming in, they even knew that they were like the massive underdog. So they're making jokes about, like, you know, Corbin Blue's so young that Bronson Pinchot would probably be burping him. Every time they like did a sideline interview, was they're like, well, we're old. This is why we lost.
Yeah, it's funny because like later on in the season, you'll see there's going to be a second team of TV sitcom stars and a second team of TV kids. They're not battling each other in those episodes. But like I'm looking at the list, it's like, yeah, I'm glad we got this list because this is these two groups of sitcom TV sitcom stars and TV kids, I think, are these are the A team. We get the B team later on in the season.
If only Mr. T would show up, that would truly make it the A team.
Yeah. I got nothing.
Then he can tout Dancing with the Stars as a credit as well. Though I feel like if everyone who was on Dancing with the Stars touted it as a credit, then they were on here. The show would run an extra like 15 minutes. Let's get to the first event here, the running relay. So basically what happens is they have to do two laps around the track. Three people run in relay the first leg, and then you just have your ringer run the last leg entirely or last lap entirely by themselves. Kurt, how did the running relay work for these teams?
Well, apparently they had to run two males and two females. So obviously you're gonna have one male sitting out of each one. And we don't see, unlike in, I think, Battle of the Network Reality Stars, the strategy behind, you know, who's going to be doing what in successive events. There wasn't a lot of insight into it a la Amazing Race where you of the roadblocks or anything like that. So you know, some of the decisions were question marks in my head, but we see for the red team, the TV kids, you have Blair and Tootie running, Lisa and Kim, but then you have Joey running, and you finally have Corbin taking up that final lap. And then for the blue team, you've got Dave Coulier and Bronson Pinchot doing the first lap along with AJ Michalka, and then going against Corbin in the TV sitcom lap, the final full lap, you have Tracy Gold. So, it was interesting because it really all kind of came down to that final lap. And you know, like you said, Corbin blew Tracy out of the water or into the water for the next event.
Yeah, though I think Tracy's going to do much better in the water than she does on land, apparently. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for a second, I mean, they talk about this over the announcements as it's going on. The blue team did have a chance for a bit because basically they're saying if we get enough of a lead up as we get to Tracy for this final leg, it doesn't matter that Corbin's behind us because we'll just beat it purely by like attrition. And it looked like it was going to be there for a second because Lisa Welchel does a false start, which I sort of understood. I mean, I didn't know if we were going to get the three beeps and then the high pitch beep or just the one beep if we're going like Mario Kart style or what. So I'm assuming she just heard a beep and then just like stepped off and then immediately realized her mistake.
Yeah, but then she went back and tagged up again. So, that might have cost her some time. But then you had like, you know, Joey caught up, you know, closed the gap on AJ as finishing that first lap, and then Corbin. Like, I didn't know of going into this. Maybe Tracy is like one of the things that we haven't learned about her is that she has been trained. This is her, like, she's run seven marathons over the course of like, you know, the past 10 years or something. Like, I don't know. Like, she could be just like an amazing runner. And so like, maybe that's why they put her in that last spot. But any lead that they had that the blue team had because of Lisa Welchel getting a little kind of a slow start was, you know, Joey closed that gap and then Corbin just closed it completely.
Well, we also have to remember that the blue team didn't have Tom Arnold in there. Now, granted, I don't think you want to put Tom Arnold on a track anyway, even if DeMarcus Ware is trying to pump him full of Pedialyte and electrolytes. it might have just been by default because, you know, Dave and Bronson were fine, AJ was fine, but Tracy might have been their best runner. So in like a group of D's, she might have been like a D+, which doesn't compare to the A that is Corbin Blue.
Right. Well, I'm just like wondering, like, why don't you swap in, have Tracy do one of the legs of the first lap and then swap in Nolan for either Dave or Bronson? Again, unless they had to save him for like another event that was coming up, like they couldn't do him because he was going to be doing swimming or something like that. But I know it just, you know, we watch a lot of reality TV here on wrap ups. And like part of me is like wondering, there that final lap, like is an idol going to be played? Is there going to be something that's going to stop this run to the finish for Corbin Bleu? But no, it's just a run around a track, Kurt. And that's, you're not going to have any twists that are going to save the Bleu team here.
Well, if we know Lisa Wilchel's good at one thing, is accidentally finding other people's idols. So the TV kids end up getting 1 point thanks to Corbin. We move to the pool for our next couple of events. Event number two is the swim relay, basically just going 25 meters each way. We have Nolan and who is it? It's
Tootie,
right? Versus Bronson and Tracy. I will say overall, admittedly, Bronson Pinchot and Dave Coulier do not look the most in shape, but both of them over the course of this episode really surprised me in terms of their performances. Bronson, especially here in the pool.
If I had to like look at these 10 contenders and say to myself, who here probably mirrors how I would perform myself in Battle of the Network Stars, I probably would say Bronson Pinchot. Like we could talk about, like, you know, Tracy does get a really good dive into the pool. But I think what really surprised me the most was that, you know, Bronson was starting. So the women had to do the first lap of 25 meters across the pool, and then they tagged, and then their partner did the male did the other half of the lap. And Bronson started in the pool, whereas Nolan stood on the edge to dive in. And I thought for sure that was going to give the edge to Nolan Gould. But Balky ended up pulling ahead. It seemed like Nolan jumping into the pool kind of had a Scoopin-esque issue with the goggles that he was wearing while swimming.
Oh my God, so many Survivor Philippines reference. I mean, it obviously invites themselves, but I'm so happy we made that. But yeah, I mean, I completely agree. You think on paper. I mean, we saw it even in this first leg where Kim Fields, for some reason, doesn't want to dive, but Tracy does. And as a result, Tracy gets off to a pretty significant lead from Kim. And then I don't know, you think Nolan Gould, he's like as long and lanky as 25 meters, so he could have just fallen over and tagged the end of the under the end of the pool. But as you said, the goggles came off and his rhythm got thrown off, so Bronson Pinchot is actually able to pull ahead and tie it up. And we have this again, this really fun sign language report with Bronson where they say, you know, how did you get the win? And he just says, I just didn't care about living anymore.
Yeah, it's and not just that. I like the sideline report before the event, which is something we wouldn't have seen this obviously on the original Battle of the Network Stars. But they had to have one of the TV kids females, either Lisa or Kim, do this first length of the pool. And neither of them really wanted to get into a bathing suit and do this lap. And they cited the fact that, you know, what were people going to say on social media? So completely, again, not something we would have seen in 1984, you know, 33 years ago when they were first competing on Battle of the Network Stars. So I thought that was kind of just an interesting insight, not just into how the times have changed, but into at least like even like how celebrities think about image and social media. It was something I just found like it was an interesting side commentary, that this was something that they were debating back and forth, and that they even aired it as an issue. And then Kim finally says, you know, I am woman, hear me roar and get me in the pool.
Totally tangential, but because Rhonda is the one to kind of rousey their spirits in that moment, what did you think about Rhonda and DeMarcus as the coaches? Because those are other two installations that we're going to see week after week on this show.
This might not be a popular opinion, but I thought that they were good personalities, but completely unnecessary to the show. I think I almost would have rather seen a little bit like we saw on the Reality Stars, a team captain of some sort. We'll talk a little bit more about when we get to the obstacle course. But, you know, the coaches are sometimes giving advice and the contestants are completely ignoring it. Sometimes they'll follow it. Sometimes they won't. So I thought it was maybe for a show that's trying to manage a lot of personalities in 42 minutes. I thought that having two additional people who are kind of these sideline coaches, or not even like sideline in the game, like, well, coaches.
I don't know. Ronnie Rousey's going to get into the game at one point to throw in the dunk tank. So you can consider her a contestant at that point.
That's true. Like maybe the value of having them there as a constant thread will be seen a few episodes in. So it's a little hard to tell after one episode. But again, after just this one episode, I would have been just as happy with, let's make Bronson or Dave Coulier the team captain and work from there.
I'd agree with that. And even the original incarnation of Battle of the Network Stars, each you know, network had a captain. So I think you could go internal. There are some fun moments. We're going to talk about, you know, Ronda Rousey with Tom Arnold in the dunk tank later on, where I don't feel like they're intensely boring television, but sometimes they're almost extraneous. Now, as the season moves along, we might see them get a little more vocal, especially, you know, if we don't need to explain these games over and over again. But I think they're fine for now, but almost vestigial.
Yeah. And you get the impression that this is filmed over the course of a single day. I mean, this isn't something that they, I did not get the impression.
I do not think Tom Arnold would sign on for more than one day.
Yeah, no, they're not getting him. I don't think production is going to want to try to wrangle him for 2 days, let alone him actually signing up for more than one. And so if you're looking at, you know, potentially, you know, 10 production days, that's potentially just like 2 weeks that this entire thing was filmed across. So if that's the case, I mean, there's, they might have taken a month instead of 2 weeks to do it. Who knows? But it will be interesting to see if they are the ones that are there, if the coaches are the ones that are there back to back to back, day after day after day. It will be kind of fun to see potentially how, if they start to like lose it a little bit, that might get entertaining.
Yeah, they might have their own case of Buseyitis and give weird acronym-like speeches to their teams. Let's go to the pool for our other event here, the kayak relay, where essentially they need to paddle a kayak around a buoy and back. Very like Nickelodeon Guts, from my generation's perspective. It's Dave and AJ versus Corbin and Lisa. Now, DeMarcus sort of outlines earlier on in his team huddle that it's not necessarily about strength as much as it is about consistent strokes. And that even shows in this first male leg where Dave gets a significant lead over Corbin. But a running theme up until the very end of this episode of Battle of the Network Stars is AJ Mishaka just screws everything up for her team.
Yeah, it's like in the men's leg, like you said, like you see like when Corbin is in the water and he's got seems more power than Dave, but he's a lot of that power is being used to kind of the front of the boat is bouncing back and forth. And he also really misses that transition around the buoy to come back. But to your point, you know, Dave's lead and his transition to AJ goes smoothly. But the moment AJ starts kind of paddling, you know, she goes into Lisa Welchel's lane. She, you know, turns the wrong way around the buoy. She kind of having some of the same issues that Corbin was having. So I don't know, maybe is the lesson here that age begets knowledge about kayaking, because Dave and Lisa seem to really master it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there was a big like sitcom rafting trip that they would do in the 80s and 90s that just AJ has not been able to do, because I mean, yeah, she and we'll talk later about like other times that she might screw things up. But yeah, she really biffs the lead for her team here to the point where I thought for a second that when she went into Lisa's lane, like they're yelling disqualification. I know the previous incarnation of Battle of the Network Stars would add like time penalties on. I thought they might do that. But no, I think she's just losing the lead for her team is enough of a punishment.
Yeah, we saw some time penalties in the Battle of the Reality Stars here. It just seemed it was pretty much straight up. Here's your points.
Yeah. So the TV kids are up 2-1 from the TV sitcoms group. Here we have almost like The Voice, Kurt, when they have these like montaged artists. We get a couple of montaged sports, which, you know, at the top when I was thinking, like, how are they going to put 10 sports into 42 minutes? Yeah. This is the answer. They do a bunch of like individual one-on-one events. In this one, we're going to get basketball and soccer. Overall, Kurt, what did you think about these sports, both from like a design perspective and an airing perspective?
I was a little surprised. I couldn't remember from some of the original if it was kind of basically a game of, you know, around the world or horse where you're shooting from different, you're basically trying to shoot from the 3-point line. I would have enjoyed seeing more of the antagonism between Joey Lawrence and Uncle Joey, aka Dave Coulier. No, they were fine. I would be surprised in future episodes if we don't also see some of these yada yada events more in depth.
Mm. Well, yeah, and I think it is a little resorts oriented as well, because yeah, just going basically into what happened, as you said, basketball is Dave versus Joey. Essentially, this basketball is we set up 5 different stations of 5 balls each on the 3-point line. Shoot as many as you can. Dave only gets 5, but apparently Joey Lawrence cannot get anything, which is going to be a thing to come in a couple of tasks from now. So TV sitcoms tie things up. soccer, it seems like they put up, you know, a little point system to see who can kick the ball into what part of the goal. Tracy, I don't think gets any, but Kim Fields gets two balls in for 20 points. I did love Kim Fields doing the Mia Hamm and screaming, though. I don't know, considering what she thinks about the swimsuit stuff, I don't think she would necessarily get down to the sports bra. But TV Kids is ahead 3-2 as we get to definitely one of the big hallmarks of the reality of the Battle of the Network Stars and all of its incarnations, the dunk tank.
Yeah, and it's and so here it looks like each team got to field two players, and each player had three attempts to dunk an opponent. And apparently, if you dunk them, then you're done. You just have to dunk them once. Because we do see, I think it was Bronson dunked Nolan, and or I can't remember, maybe it was Dave Coulier had dunked Lisa Welchel, and like on his second throw or something, and he didn't get a third throw. So I believe they got up to three attempts to try to hit their opponent once. So in short, each team had the chance to score 2 points here. You scored a point if you successfully in your attempts dunked your opponent.
Any highlights from this segment, Kurt?
Tom Arnold promoting Roseanne's new show in the fall.
Yeah, that was a little strange because he was like purposely hokey before when he's like, yeah, I'm doing this for my kids. He's like, oh, wait, no, I'm not. But then he talks later on, like, actually pretty earnestly about, like, I'm proud that Roseanne has another opportunity to do what she does on TV, which they have tumultuous, would not even begin to describe the relationship that they have. But such a weird thing to put in there. I also love Joey Lawrence saying that Dave Coulier used to be a mime in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was just random. The and the whole Roseanne thing is where it struck me is like, if you watch this show as an hour long commercial for ABC, it loses a lot of its fun and sparkle. So maybe that's one of those things where now you may not be able to unsee it. But it really began to remind me, and this probably predates you, Mike Bloom, is back in the day when Saturday morning cartoons on the three networks were like the huge thing, like right before the new Saturday morning lineup would start in the fall, like usually in late summer, each of the networks would have like on Friday night an hour long special, which was kind of set up usually as like as a variety show or something, but it basically promoted each of the network's Saturday morning cartoons. And that's kind of what this felt like to me, was like another version of, hey, let's use this to promote our ABC lineup. So I'm hoping they do move a little bit away from that, and because there was just the whole Roseanne thing felt very forced to me, especially like you said, given their tumultuous relationship.
More forced than Tom Arnold was forced back into the pool by Ronda Rousey's jacket.
I believe it's a gi, Mike Bloom.
Yes, I did love. So, yeah, Ronda Rousey had this really fun and badass moment where so Tom Arnold doesn't get dunked, right? It's Joey Lawrence is throwing. And again, Joey Lawrence misses all three, though. He's almost throwing the baseballs like he did a basketball, which is not the way to go. Yeah. You're looking for force behind those moves.
Yeah, for someone who looks very athletic, and he ran well, but for someone who's like, obviously spends a lot of time in the gym, there wasn't, glass house throwing stones, pot kettle black. I have no room to speak, but in terms of, I was very underwhelmed by his performance in the basketball shooting and his technique for throwing at the dunk tank.
Yeah, a lot of popcorn muscles on Joey Lawrence, it looks like. But yeah, after Joey Lawrence misses all three, Ronda says, like, yeah, you know what? Like, I want to send Tom Arnold in, because you even have the announcers be like, Tom Arnold's got to get up there. He's the biggest S-stirrer of the entire group. And I do want to sort of briefly go back here, Kurt. Any highlights from the heckling, I should say, from those that were in the dunk tank, between Lisa begging for mercy from Dave Coulier to Tom Arnold just not shutting up to try to throw Joey Lawrence off?
Well, for me, I think it was Tom's, like, did he say, like, I played your dad on TV before and I've known your family for ages? And that's the funny thing about like the Lawrence brothers is there's Lawrence parents that I know nothing about. And so for all I know, Tom Arnold is actually Joey Lawrence's dad. That's for me, that was just kind of amusing. The fact that, like, instead of usually you think the dunk tank, you think of heckling, whereas for Tom just seemed to really be trying to play on Joey's heartstrings. And a part of me was wondering if Joey did throw it, like, because he wasn't throwing the ball. So maybe he was throwing the competition because he just did not seem to have his heart in it.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Throwing competitions, that's not something a Tan Dang would do. Lisa Welchel can tell you that. But essentially what happens, going back to this Tom Ronda Rousey thing, is that Ronda eventually does send Tom into the pool by just saying, like, hey, you know what? You got to get dunked. Also, like, a precipitous fall into the pool. As they said, this is the height is five times higher than it was in the regular dunk tank.
Given that the regular dunk tank is like carnival dunk tank, where there's like 3 feet between you and the water, or 4 or 5 feet. This was like, I was disappointed we didn't get treated to Tom Arnold walking along the narrow ledge to sit down on the dunk tank. That actually has probably been pretty entertaining.
I'm surprised that he wasn't already wet, because I'm assuming he fell in a couple times. But I was also surprised that like nobody pulled like something from the challenge where they drop people in the water from like really huge heights and people like break their faces open. I'm surprised that didn't happen here. But Tom does get sent in, and Rhonda and DeMarcus help him out of the pool, and he tries to push her back in. He grabs her jacket and she just shimmies out of that thing in like 1 second and sends him flying back in.
And like she says, it's well known in martial arts, if somebody grabs your gi to kind of like throw you off balance, you just like try to slip out of it. So they basically take your gi, take your jacket, and fall backwards with it. And that's exactly what she did with him. Like she felt him grabbing her clothing, and she just kind of like put her hands straight up in front of her and just slipped out of it, and she fell in the pool. And like, she was wearing stuff underneath it, obviously. And I have a feeling that even if she wasn't, she probably would have done it anyway.
What are the chances that sometime now in the ABC lineup in the next couple of years, we're going to see a sitcom about Ronda Rousey being a judo master to a group of kids?
From your lips to nobody's ears. I mean, let's not do that.
Rouse House Roundhouse coming this fall to ABC. So we're halfway through here, and things are surprisingly tied up as we get into another montage here. Tennis, archery, and golf. Kurt, any highlights from this grouping?
I'd say like the only, I mean, this is funny. It's like, we talk about how like Tom doesn't really contribute, hasn't really contributed to the team. But these moments of his are the ones that we're actually talking about the most. For me, it was, for the golf, they had like one tee shot per person. And they had to basically, they were 60 yards from the pin, and whoever got closest won. Corbin handily won, but Tom, like his ball went like, maybe 15 feet, just like right into the water hazard. And then there's this little side, like he starts feeding the ducks, and apparently the green superintendent's like, against the green superintendent's wishes, Tom Arnold did feed the ducks. And so, I think it was almost like he was not really contributing a lot to the team yet.
Yeah, he's gonna have his one big shining moment later on, but these are just moments where you can tell the blue team's like, oh god, why did we get Tom Arnold? Because even before he like chips it into the water, he initially like accidentally hits it off the tee, and you can tell the crew's like, well, let's just let Tom Arnold do what he wants, because like I could definitely see in another universe they'd be like, oh nope, he touched it, that's that's the consolation. That's what he gets. But he could basically do what I think in the interstitial, he's like, do I get another try? And I would think for a second that they almost would give him another try, just because he's Tom Arnold and they're keeping him there.
Yeah, that was the warm up. What about you between the tennis, the archery, and the golf? Anything that stood out?
I mean, again, AJ Mushaka is sandbagging it for the TV sitcoms team with the tennis. So the tennis is just going to the archery for a brief second, because that was definitely the yada yada one of the three. Basically hit the target with arrows, because that's the onus of archery. Bronson versus Nolan. Bronson hits nothing. Nolan hits 2 points and then 1 point. For the tennis, it's AJ versus Lisa. Basically, you have to hit tennis balls back from a machine, return 20 serves, and get as many in as possible. Lisa Welchel gets off to a rocky start and she gets 5. AJ Mushaka only a paltry 3, and she is grumbling the entire time about how ridiculous this is for her.
It's hard to say she's sandbagging it when she only got 2 less than her opponent. I mean, they both were kind of like, Lisa was batting, 25% batting, wrong sport. Basically got 25% of the balls, and AD didn't do much worse than her, but we don't know the rules for fielding your team here. I'm surprised that we didn't see Tracy do this.
Yeah, though, I mean, again, if you go into the other singular events, it seems like if we're combining tennis, archery, golf, soccer, and basketball, you would want to put each member of your team on one of those tasks. And maybe it was just, again, a matter of like, well, Tracy, I guess by default, you're the best at soccer. So go in there and kick that ball as far away from the goal as you can.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, we talked about Purple Tracy earlier, but it's like, you know, there was three males and two females on each team. And so you'd think that you'd be more likely to have a male vanish into the background, a little bit like Nolan did, I think. But it just seemed like for AJ, you know, comprising only 50% of the females on the team, she seemed to get about like 90% of the female screen time for her team.
She got that underdog edit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They did play her up as a turning point in the game.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, I know you said before that AJ only did marginally worse than Lisa, but the announcers would not let you hear that because they kept saying, like, AJ's gonna make up for this deficit she's caused with her team, single-handedly bringing the TV sitcoms down, and not just by the age range.
Yeah, it's they're trying as best they can to craft a story arc over the single episode. I think that's one of the other things that I would have been interested to go back and compare it to the original Battle of the Network Stars. Like, did they give contestants their story arcs? Like, this person ruined it in the obstacle course race, but then and you see their disappointment on the sideline interviews, and then later on they're hesitant to do this one thing because they don't want it to screw their team up again, but then they bring them back in the final event and they turn things around. It's like, I have a feeling that back in the late 70s and 80s, that you probably didn't have that sort of story arc editing for something like Battle of the Network Stars. Again, it was more of a sports event than a sitcom. And and here it seems like they are looking for that story arc where they can actually communicate something interesting about a person as they go through.
Yeah, the one episode that I saw a couple weeks ago, which was the very first one, there really was not a storyline throughout outside of Robert Conrad, like, throwing a big old hissy fit about his team getting disqualified from the relay race. So they run like an impromptu runoff between them and ABC, I think. But I think that's also a matter because, like, I believe the teams for Battle of the Network Stars had like 10 people on it as well. So they divided things pretty evenly, and they're really just wasn't time to show everything over the course of a 2-hour period. Here, it's 5 people on each team, and we're getting to know them. Granted, we're definitely speeding things along as we get to these last 2 events, but maybe if they find an opportunity to craft a storyline, they'll produce it. I mean, we'll also see in the coming weeks, again, if they decide to go along with this, or if they have these storylines like, you know, AJ redeeming her team on the obstacle course, or Tom Arnold being essentially useless until the tug of war for future incarnations.
Yeah, so I have a feeling that many times they're like grasping at straws to put together that sort of meaningful story element for some of these upcoming episodes. It'll be interesting to see what they try to squeeze out of them.
Well, let's get to these last couple of events here, because they are staples of the original Battle of the Network Stars. First, we have this obstacle course, which looks a little updated. Kurt, did you take note of any sort of the new improvements that have come to the obstacle course in this new incarnation?
The rope swing appears to be a little bit longer. They said it was a 50-foot rope swing over water, so that appeared to be longer. I think the cargo net and slide at the end seemed to be updated. I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm used to things like American Ninja Warrior and Wipeout. Still, this obstacle course seemed kind of anemic to me in terms of just very bare bones. And I would have liked to see a little bit more production value. But at the same time, I went into this because I'm pretty sure that this was like that this was going to be the last event. I thought I completely had been forgetting the promos that there's also a tug of war. So I thought that this was going to be the final event. And I had been hoping that it was a little bit more of a production as opposed to junior high field day. We have to clear this off of the football field before third period. There's survivor challenges that had more production value than this. And I would have liked to have seen something bigger and grander for an obstacle course.
And I'm sure there would be some survivor contestants that would love the ability to use a punch through to get through an obstacle course, considering some aggression that those contestants have. That's the other one thing that I noticed, too, because I think that the original obstacle course was pretty much what the rat trap and then the tire run and then go over the cargo wall, monkey bars, and then do that rope swing, which, yeah, it did increase the length because, I mean, you see even in the Battle of the Network Reality Stars, you see people just vault over it instead of actually using the rope and then the finish line. So now we have this weird punch through where there's a sandbag or a punching bag on like a little track that you have to kind of punch its way through. I thought you were going to be on a balance beam, but no, you just need to be on the ground and either like punch it or tackle it, but just make sure it makes its way down its curving track.
Yeah, I wonder if you could like jump on it and swing across. Like that was something that when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Do they have to like hang from it or something? But no, they just kind of have to push/punch it. I think adding a balance beam to it would have been an interesting twist. So let's get you on the season two Network Stars production challenge team. Get you working on some of these things, Mike Bloom.
Yeah, I'm going to be the John Kierhofer of Battle of the Network Stars. And if I would, I would probably take away this weird rule about the monkey bars that they have to touch bars 1, 3, and 5. I guess I could understand for like expediting things. You don't want somebody hung up on the monkey bars. It makes for a closer competition. But I don't know. It was a little weak sauce to me that like Kim Fields fell off and just had to touch the last bar to be able to move on.
Yeah, she hit 1 and 3, fell down. Went to the end of it, then just kind of reached back and got 5. I'm wondering if if this was chronologically actually the first. My guess is it wasn't. Like if we're looking at like how these 10 episodes were filmed, my guess is that they kind of probably tried to front load like the episode that probably had the most recognizable faces. But if this was actually the first episode that was filmed, it will be interesting to see if the coaches see what Kim did and you recommend that as a strategy for future people running it, or if they if the actual rules change for the monkey bars in future. Maybe you have to touch every one of them in future episodes. So it won't be the first time that we will have seen during the course of a season, if there's like a repeated challenge, potentially the rule is shifting a little bit. I'm thinking specifically about Ultimate Beastmaster on Netflix, and even occasionally during some of the episodes of Ninja Warrior, they'll adjust the rules or the challenges slightly. So, kind of weak sauce on the monkey bars there. I kind of liked the commentary about how the rope swing is just a disaster waiting to happen. Otherwise it was pretty straightforward. But you're not going to have any dunk nuts jumping over the water hazard when it's 50 feet long.
We didn't get dunk nuts in the dunk tank anyway. I mean, I don't know how you'd bring him back. I guess TV Moms and Dads, because he was on Showbiz Moms and Dads, but we never got that pun to see itself out fully. But yeah, so the two legs, it runs female versus female, male versus male, Kim versus AJ, and Bronson versus Corbin. I was also remarking previously about time penalties as well, which I feel like were fervent throughout the other editions that we've seen before. I'm a little surprised that they didn't, like, if someone like Kim does this thing with the monkey bars, they don't assess like a 5-second time penalty, because it's like you said, theoretically someone could now sort of break the monkey bars by being like, yeah, I'm just going to walk along and touch the other two bars and run forward. You kind of need to reprimand people for that, right?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to it being kind of a fun, lighthearted event versus something that, like, again, the more serious competition of the original series. Let's crack down on these people. Let's give Tootie a hard time for what she did.
So AJ, as we've talked about before, when she races against Kim, she ends up getting the redemption just barely. It seems like they both have a lot of trouble swinging through the rope swing, and basically they end up just dunking their feet in water. And then once they go up and over the cargo net fun slide, they both stumble their way to the finish line. But AJ ends up actually winning something for their team. Something interesting I found as well is that I believe in the original Battle of the Network Stars, they added together cumulatively the times of each team and then awarded points based on that. Here it seems like if you cross it before the other team for your heat, you get 2 points.
No, I think for this one they had 5 points per gender. There was 5 points available for the woman versus woman match, and then 5 points available for the man versus man match.
That's what it was.
And so you're in a situation where if the team that comes into this in the lead wins both heats, there's no way that the 10-point tug of war is going to have any effect on the outcome of the game. So again, it'll be interesting to see if that situation comes into play. But yeah, Kim was ahead for a good deal of it, but really AJ did close the gap on the cargo net portion of that last obstacle, and even like got onto the slide a bit earlier. And though Kim did stumble coming out of the slide, but AJ was slightly in the lead and pulled ahead for the team. So. And then you have Corbin running against Bronson for the men's heat. So that really wasn't much of a challenge.
No, when you have the announcers even saying that Bronson Pinchot finished third out of two, you know that, again, valiant effort by Bronson Pinchot, but again, there's no way to catch up to him. I mean, Bronson, again, is going to have another great interview on the sideline where they say, what may have tripped you up? And he just goes, three decades. And again, just a clear attitude of like, IDGAF, like, I'm so much older than these people. Of course, I was not going to keep up with them on a pure obstacle course.
I'm three decades older than that child was probably my favorite line of the entire night.
All right, so we move to our final event. Tom Arnold's shining achievement here, the tug of war, assessing 10 points. Kurt, I also want to say on top of this, between the 5 points for the obstacle course and the 10 points for the tug of war, how did you feel about the sudden upscale in points that essentially, you know, rendering the previous rounds completely useless?
Well, again, as long as one team doesn't go into the obstacle course 5 points ahead of the other team, and as long as the team that is ahead doesn't win both legs, then ultimately they have to create a show. I mean, I tend to prefer the kind of formats of things like this. Maybe I'm like going back to American Gladiators where, the person, your point lead is translated into a number of seconds lead in an obstacle course or something like that. Mm-hmm. I tend to prefer that, where your lead going to the final is somehow translated into some sort of quantifiable advantage. But that's why I had thought that the obstacle course was gonna be the final leg. Here it just so happens that it is walking that tightrope of, on the one hand,
you're talking about Circus of the Stars, Kurt?
Yes, exactly. On the one hand, you want that still to be up for grabs at the final event, because if it's not, then what's the point? On the other hand, like you said, it's like, well, the previous events all don't matter because it comes down to this one. And there's I don't know. So it's, I think they could maybe tweak the system a little bit. Would love to consult on that. But I'll get
you an in once I officially get on the challenge staff for Battle of the Network Stars when it inevitably returns in 2018.
And regardless of the sudden boost in points and the what did you think about Tug of War as the crowning point of the episode in terms of, you know, how things culminate to this event?
I mean, I think we've been praising this show throughout this podcast about the fact that it really is showing its history and leading on its predecessor. And I mean, that was the way they ended every Battle of the Network Stars, was that the two top teams would do it. I mean, is it a little company picnic? Yes, but I think it goes along with this like idea of like summer lighthearted fun. We're going to end on this. And it also ends, like, again, if you're talking about the storytelling, the arc of this episode, because of the tug of war, we end up with this really fun ending where this group of much older individuals, with AJ Mashaka being the exception, ends up beating out the overall younger athletic people.
Right. And it is the one event where all five people compete. I mean, you kind of start with the running relay where four of the five people compete. And who knows, maybe we'll see in upcoming episodes that it's like, well, it's actually all five will compete in the running relay. We just did four of the five because Tom Arnold was hungover / not there. So this is, it is nice to end with all five people competing, but yeah, it's Tom steps up a little Jonathan Baker-ish. If you listen to our recap of Battle of the Network Reality Stars, saying, oh, I got this, guys, I was on a college championship tug of war team. That's like, I was right up there on a college championship flip cup team. So it's one of those things you look at and is like, okay, is that really a thing? But when your alternative is the other team is kind of fielding advice from Blair from Facts of Life about, let's just throw sand in their eyes. Tom apparently actually had some sort of strategy that worked.
Absolutely. And I don't exactly know. Did he mean like there was like an NCAA for tug of war? Did he mean like within his college he was a champion? Because, like, for example, I was a part of Greek life in my college, and we would have Greek week every year, and like part of Greek week was the fraternities were compete against each other in a series of events, and I think one of them was a tug of war. So if it's from that capacity, I could totally imagine like Tom Arnold and his, you know, greased up shirtless frat bros tying ropes around themselves and pulling with all their might.
Things I can't unsee now. Thank you, Mike. I'm guessing that tug of war was probably passed on by the NCAA as an official, school, a college sport. So this might be a intra-college as opposed to inter-college championship.
Well, I would say, outside of Tom Arnold's strategy, I do feel like the TV sitcoms team, I don't mean to shame this in any way, shape, or form, because it ended up working for them. I feel like they had the weight behind them. You have Nolan Gould, the walking stick. You have Corbin Blue, who, while like super fast and athletic, definitely doesn't have a lot of body mass. We talked about Joey Lawrence's popcorn muscles as compared to I feel like Dave Coulier, Bronson Pinchot, and Tom Arnold are all like pretty heavy hitters that I think it would be tough for those people to drag them across the line to begin with.
They had three anchors on their team, not just one person at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we see here, they start with the standard pull, but then the sitcoms take the good route of, low and slow, essentially. And once they hit the ground, I like seeing the TV sitcoms team or the TV kids team essentially like flop onto the ground, and they're struggling for a little while. Kim's able to make up a little bit of ground. She's in the front, and she's able to, again, break the challenge in a way by propping her foot up against the pool that they're supposed to be falling in. I wasn't sure if it was rules where they had to pull everyone into the pool or if they just crossed a certain line, and it ended up being the latter.
There was a yellow flag that's tied right in the center of the rope, and if that yellow flag, and then on your side of the pool is your team's flag, and if that yellow flag basically crosses the plane of that is formed by your flag, then your team wins. So basically you're trying to get this certain point, this fixed point on the rope, past a certain point on the ground on your side.
Yeah, and I also feel like, though, I don't know, maybe the producers wanted them to be over the pool to get this effect of people falling in, but they actually went, to the side of the pool, which is why Kim was able to get her foot up against it. Nolan Gould will eventually dive into the pool during the credits to satisfy everyone's wishes, but I just thought it was funny that they're like, we're not going to go in the pool. We're going to pull to the land slightly to the right of the pool.
Yeah, it's and at that point, it's really about, the ropes, I imagine the rope probably slipping through your hands and having it, the other team win that way before necessarily you falling forward. It's like, I think you're going to lose the grip on the rope before you lose the grip on the ground. But we weren't really treated to what Tom's winning strategy was, were we? I imagine it was just digging with your feet and pull with your legs and not with your hands, if that's somehow possible. But did we hear what his winning strategy was?
No, I think we heard DeMarcus talk a little bit about you want to get low, but we hear Rhonda say the same thing as well. I mean, maybe it's just sort of like the team was able to benefit because they decided to take that strategy immediately. They ironically got the higher ground by being lower, whereas, again, we saw the TV kids sort of flop down on their bellies and then have to readjust, and they lost a lot of ground that way. But yeah, TV sitcoms pull out the win. They get a necessary 10 points, putting them in the lead 19-12. They win these nice little ABC medals, which I thought was a lot of fun. And as we talked before, AJ Mashaka gets the MVP. I would argue it might go to Corbin Blue, but I guess it has to go to a member of the winning team. And a fun time was had by all on Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah, I get what would be the award that Corbin gets? Like, is it like MDP, most disappointed player? Because he did a lot for his team, but despite his team,
I think he get Miss Congeniality, except I know that's okay. Not a term that wants to be favored nowadays on reality TV, but I feel like you got to give it to him in some capacity, right? Of like, he was able to really do well, but just didn't win in the end.
Yeah, he maybe it's the Miss Congeniality award. He gets to wear a light jacket.
Well, I mean, he did wear a nice leather jacket when he came in, so maybe that was the light jacket, and his sunglasses too. Corbin Blue was too cool for school. But he was able to not necessarily be cooled off by Paul falling in that pool, even though the TV kids team does lose in an upset. Before we end things off here, Kurt, let's look over the next 9 weeks of Battle of the Network Stars. I won't go through all the other 90 individuals that are going to be competing, but looking over the lineup, do you have any groups or people that stand out to you?
I know there's a lot of Celebrity Apprentice people that randomly are appearing throughout this cast, which will be interesting to see. I'm interested. I know Anson Williams on the ABC Stars group, Potsy on Happy Days. That'll be kind of a fun. Again, it's just people that you haven't seen forever. I think that the the Variety group with Kelly Osbourne, Lance Bass, and Joey Fatone could potentially be amusing. And you've got the sci-fi fantasy group with Lou Ferrigno and Kevin Sorbo. So you've got the Hulk and Hercules there. I don't know. There's some interesting names throughout. It'll be interesting. I'll have to kind of see where things go.
The interesting thing is that, like, as you said, we get Joey Fatone and Lance Bass. I believe next episode, we have the first Variety team that has Nick Lachey and Vanessa Lachey. But we have Jack Osbourne and Kelly Osbourne competing, but they're competing in separate groups. I don't know if it was an availability thing, but it'd be weird if they, like, insisted not to compete with their sibling on Battle of the Network Stars.
That would be... I completely missed the fact that both of them were competing. I'm wondering if that was a... if that was on purpose, or... they were like, put us where you want to.
I also want to highlight the famous TV families group.
Yes.
Just to have, I mean, Danny Bonaducci in all of his Fair Play dropping insanity is going to be back on our screens. I know that you said this is sort of a show that has a lot of lighthearted fun. I feel like Danny Bonaducci is going to take this way too seriously and absolutely Hulk out and rage out when something doesn't go his way.
Yes. These people who have kind of a reality TV tie-ins in their background, I think, are going to be interesting to watch. But the other interesting thing about that group, you've got Barry Williams, Greg Brady from the Brady Bunch. You've got Willie Ames from Charles in Charge. I think that's going to be a fun group. I don't know many of the folks. They're going up against the TV Doctors. Taye Diggs is there, Deidre Hall. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but yeah, Danny's going to be at least the drama bringer.
Yeah, and we even have, I believe, Willie Ames, when he completed on Celebrity Fit Club, was actually a pretty anger-inducing person as well. I remember him, like, shirtlessly, angrily punching a wall at some point. So that might be, like, if you're looking for the drama capacity of the show, that might be the epicenter of it. But yeah, we've got 9 more weeks of this. We've talked before about, you know, what might repeat and what might not. Kurt, any other thoughts about this series overall in the microcosm of this first episode?
Like, we're at the top of the show, we were like, is this going to come back for a second season? I think it's one of those things where, you know, while we normally don't cover episodic shows that you can basically tune into at any point, I'm wondering if the fact that this is episodic, if its real purpose is, well, it's a Thursday night, so I'll tune into it this week, as opposed to having people want to tune into it every week. If it's really, is this a show that's there to just pick up anybody who just wants to watch TV on that night? Is that kind of the purpose of this whole ABC Summer of Fun and Games thing in general? A bunch of fun shows that are light on thinking, that don't require you to have tuned in for 6 weeks of strategy. If that's the case, we'll have to kind of see, like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks down the road, is this actually getting viewers?
Yeah, I mean, I think a good comparison for that is Shark Tank, where, you know, it's not serialized whatsoever. It's a different group of people coming in every week. And as a result, I think people are hooked because they can sort of put it on whenever they want to. So I feel like that's the appeal that comes with Battle of the Network of Stars, in addition to, you know, seeing all these famous people on your screen once again, even if it's only for 42 minutes. So as I said at the very beginning of this podcast, I had fun watching it. Is it must-watch TV? No. Is it good watch TV? Yes. I enjoyed a lot of it, especially, you know, the Tom Arnold stuff, all the Bronson and Dave quips, getting to see Lisa and Kim Fields come back together, the rise and fall that was AJ Mishaka. It was all there and it was glorious. And I hope that, you know, despite maybe not many names that I know moving forward, or not as many names as it did in this initial incarnation, hopefully they'll still be able to bring some summer fun throughout the course of these 10 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be, odds are different people that are listening to this podcast are going to have different associations with different individuals throughout the rest of this cast. And so some of you might tune into some episodes and kind of tune out others, just like you were saying at the start, Mike, is like, you're going to look at each week. Is there anybody here I'm interested in just seeing either how they do in random pseudo competitions, or just, I haven't seen them on my screen in 15, 20 years, so I might tune in. So I think that's going to kind of largely be what either, makes this work or makes it not work.
All right, Kurt Clark, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this premiere with me. I want to plug your social media and anything else you might have going on, either in the RJP atmosphere or your life.
This summer is usually pretty light for me unless ABC tries something other than Battle of the Network Stars. There's no Whodunit or The Quest this summer. So otherwise,
so are you saying no boy band podcast, Kurt? That's one with like a long term storyline.
Oh God! It's usually around like April or May. I'll tune into the internet and look for what is ABC going to experiment with in long form reality this summer. And I was very disappointed to see that it was boy band. I am not watching boy band. Maybe I'll tweet about Candy Crush in the hopes that the Clark curse will take place, via that media channel. But otherwise, I'll tweet occasionally about Big Brother UK. I'm watching Joey Graceffa's Escape the Night season 2 on YouTube Red. So other than that, you can follow me on Twitter at Kurt Clark with 2 C's.
And you can follow me on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type, doing a couple things in the wrap ups atmosphere. As of late, we just finished coverage of RuPaul's Drag Race season 9, had a super eventful, some might say polarizing, ending to that season. I covered it all with Brent Bolgamot and Liana Boris in a 2+ hour podcast. If you haven't checked that out, make sure that you do. Coming up, I'm actually going to be making an appearance on the Amazing Race Canada podcast with Jessica Leese and Dane Heaton to preview that cast and draft our fantasy teams before Dan and Jess move forward with that great coverage. I'll be filling in for Nika Danza on the Survivor New Zealand podcast as we talk about the 4-night finale week of Survivor New Zealand. I'm glad it's the summer because that's a crazy amount of Survivor even by my standards. But I'll be sitting down with Liana Boris to talk all about that and our thoughts about the season overall as well. If you're a Big Brother fan, I'm doing exit interviews for Parade magazine, so be sure to check that out. I just had an exit interview posted yesterday with the first person who was eliminated from the house. They had a lot of interesting things to say, so be sure to check that out, as well as all the other great stuff going on reality TV wrap-ups, including coverage of The Bachelorette and The Challenge and So You Think You Can Dance. So much stuff going on. We're padded full of content, just like ABC's Fun and Games, and hopefully we have enough fun and games to fill your summertime here as well. To finish things off here, Kurt, do we have a hashtag for people who made it to the end of the podcast?
What about the Rise and Fall of AJ?
Rise and Fall of AJ, is that another podcast coming to reality TV? We're wrap up soon. Get sure. Nick Fishman on the line. Oh, I was going to think Buseyitis might be another one, too.
Yeah, your choice there. I think Buseyitis would be what, Buseyitis?
Yeah, that might be easiest just to save character spaces. So, yeah, we'll go with Buseyitis just to let's check in on Tom Arnold over the next few years to see if he actually goes into that territory or if he experiences any sort of sudden departures and we create giant inflatable balloons of him to put in town squares. Who's to say with Tom Arnold? But congratulations on his and his team's victory as well. And thank you all so much for tuning in to listen to Kurt and I talk about this premiere. Let us know your thoughts about this premiere and weeks moving forward. We'd love to, get your thoughts on this series as it goes on and as we get to see Rhonda, DeMarcus, and all the rest work more and more with some of these, this group of different 10 people as they come in and out every week. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Take care, and remember, don't feed the ducks.